centuries, scientists have written off cannibalism as a bizarre phenomenon with little biological significance. Its presence in nature was dismissed as a desperate response to starvation or other life-threatening circumstances, and few spent time studying it. Now enter zoologist Bill Scutt, who has written the new book Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History, looking to set the record straight, debunking common myths and investigating our new understanding of cannibalism's role in biology, anthropology, and history. It is a great pleasure to welcome Bill Scutt to the roundtable this morning. Bill, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So what brought you to this very interesting subject?
When I talk to people who I haven't spoken to in 20, 30 years on social media, and they found out I wrote a book on cannibalism, nobody is really surprised.
Okay.
Yeah, when I went to school, I went to Cornell for my PhD, and I chose to study vampire bats. And after that, the concept of blood feeding creatures turned into my first book. So I just I got into the idea of taking concepts that are gross or most people don't understand them and demystifying them and sort of turning them away from something gruesome into something that is through the eyes of a zoologist. And so cannibalism seemed like a perfect follow-up to Dark Banquet, which was about blood and blood feeding creatures.
When you look at this, as the subtitle being A Perfectly Natural History, mm-hmm. you wanted to begin there, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a surprise to me, and I guess to a lot of other people, that cannibalism was so widespread in nature for reasons that had not much to do with starvation or overcrowding. Things like parental care or a reproductive strategy or coping with a changing environment. So that was a big shock. And so from there, I moved in and started to look at instances of cannibalism in humans, and many of those as well had nothing to do with seizures or starvation because of famine or strandings. So there were things like medicinal cannibalism. Completely shocking that for hundreds of years in Europe, the human body, every part you can possibly imagine, was used in many different cultures in Europe to cure all sorts of diseases, from drinking blood to cure epilepsy to consuming fat for skin disorders and powdering skulls and bones. So it got interesting in a hurry for me. The learning curve was really steep. I didn't really suspect that there was going to be that much more than what the party line had been, especially in the animal kingdom, that it was going to be about a lack of alternative food sources or overcrowding due to captive conditions.
You get into this in the book, and I'm hoping you can share just a little bit as to the role cannibalism plays in evolution.
The role it plays in evolution. Well, a number of different cannibal-related behaviors have evolved to cope with things like not enough males, too many children, not enough food, not enough space, a reproductive strategy that's evolved. For example, when a lion moves into and takes over a pride and there is a female there who's got a cub, well, that female's not going to come into heat for several years unless you get rid of that cub. And so you speed that process up and make her more more available to the incoming male. So things like that. I mean, that all of that has evolved. All of these kinds of neat behaviors, from trophic eggs, in a sense, kids' meals provided by spiders and snails and other organisms, a prepackaged meal for your children. These are eggs that are never going to hatch. They're just used as food. So it's used for all sorts of different purposes, and all of this stuff certainly evolved in many different organisms.
And I guess it's impossible to have this conversation without talking about the human aspect of human cannibalism.
Sure, I mean, I don't shy away from it.
No, but it is rare, isn't it? And it doesn't. And in the large story, it plays a smaller role.
Yeah, I think it was far more common before the Western taboo developed. And this is a taboo that in my mind has been developing since the time of the Greeks and then moved to the Romans and Shakespeare and the Brothers Grimm and Daniel Defoe and Freud. And it's there was this snowball effect where suddenly you've got cannibalism as the worst possible thing that you can do. And so groups that did not get that influence, at least early on, they develop, you know, culture is king. They develop their own rituals. But when Western culture became so dominant, I think that it was either squashed or some of it was sort of done in the background, or modifications were made to just eliminate that type of ritual, lest you get all the Westerners upset at you.
Right. I mean, you make this point that it's less disturbing put into context than it really.
Yeah, I think so. You know,
seems that we think of it as.
Yeah, I think a lot of people when they think of cannibalism immediately think of Jeffrey Dahmer and all of these criminal cannibals, and so I tried to steer away from the sensational aspects of that. There's enough material out there on these guys, and so I'm not a criminal. I'm not a criminal psychologist. I'm a zoologist, and so I was interested in taking apart this phenomenon from a zoological standpoint, not to sort of revel in the gore. And so, you know, when you're talking about things like ritual cannibalism or medicinal cannibalism, or it's a lot easier to talk about it. It's not. You know, you're not ladling on the gore. It's not this. It's not a horror show.
I'm interested in how we look at it today, and how you see it in our context. And do you think that we are getting to a point because of the, for want of a better term, the popular culture of cannibalism, that we are coming to a greater understanding of it as a natural part of our culture and our life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, that's what I'm trying to do with this book, because there were sort of two piles of books out there. There was the really sensationalized stuff, and then there were the academic works. I believe that this is sort of the middle ground, where you're taking these phenomenon, which are not solely, at least in humans, based on Jeffrey Dahmer and Hannibal the Cannibal. These are rituals. These are people's cultures. This is what they were taught. So I think I think we can accept that a lot more now than we could in the past. You know, when anthropologists went into these and met these indigenous groups, the people that they met were just as mortified to learn that Westerners were burying their dead as we were, or as the anthropologists were, that they were eating theirs. So, you know, I keep repeating, culture is king. It's what you're taught is okay. And these people were taught that that there's a benefit to consuming your dead. Why put them in the ground? You know, you don't want them to rot and be eaten by worms. You're incorporating your loved ones into your body. Or that it has a medicinal effect. It can cure fill in the blank. And so these are things that they're taught. And it's only because we have this narrow view, because of this Western taboo, that it's taken a long time for us to realize this. But it is, I'm trying to get the point across that there's a lot more to cannibalism than, Jeffrey Dahmer and his ilk.
You are a biologist, you are a researcher, so I'm curious as to what surprised you in your research for the book.
Two things surprised me. With regard to humans, it's how common medicinal cannibalism was throughout Europe for hundreds of years, starting in the Middle Ages, spanning the Renaissance, and even lasting into the beginning of the 20th century. That literally blew me away, especially given the Western taboo. On the other side, when I was talking about, looking into animals, how widespread it was, and how many reasons there were for cannibalism in the animal kingdom. And you've got all of these really neat phenomenon, like toads that lay their eggs in ponds that are no more than puddles. And this is in places that like Arizona, that the pond might dry out in a day. And what has evolved is a mechanism to get some of those tadpoles out of the pool as quickly as possible. And one way that they do that is that a certain percentage of them get huge overnight. They grow these big teeth and huge jaw muscles, and they eat their pond mates, and so they develop quicker and they survive. You know, that stuff to me is fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating. The name of the book is Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History. The book is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. Bill, thank you very much for joining us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Yes, thank you for having me. Take care.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History by Bill Schutt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.